You're listening to Equipping Pastors with Ken Whitten, a podcast powered by the North American Mission Board. Here you will find conversations to help you engage with other pastors, equip you for the everyday grind of ministry, and encourage you to live out your calling with confidence. To find out more about the podcast or resources for pastors, visit EquippingPastorsPodcast.com.
Well, hi, welcome to the Equipping Pastors Podcast, and I'm your host, Ken Whitten. Hey, Pastor, have you ever found yourself inheriting a culture where God has sent you, a culture even that you want to honor, but a culture that you know that it needs to be changed? Well, if you've ever found yourself in that situation, you're going to love our podcast guest today. His name is Noe Garcia. Noe grew up in Houston, Texas. He is currently and has been since 2016 the senior pastor of North Phoenix Baptist Church in Phoenix, Arizona. He's a East Texas Baptist University graduate. He has his master's at Golden Gate Seminary. He served on staffs with churches like Second Baptist Houston, First Baptist Nashville, Cross Church Fayetteville, Arkansas. He has his doctorate in ministry and executive leadership at Southern Seminary. He's 41 years old. He's married to his best friend, Clancy. They have four children, and we welcome today Noe Garcia. Noe, glad to have you on the podcast.
Hey, Pastor Ken, I appreciate you. It's an honor to be here with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you. Hey, Noe, let me start the podcast by asking this question, and that can even be a little bit of your testimony. How has God used the experience of your life growing up to be the leader that you are today?
Wow, that's a great opening question there. I think looking back, the Lord really has used some of the darkest moments and some of the greatest moments, and has really used everything that I've walked through in leadership and life to mold me to have a certain dependence on Him. I think sometimes there is a need in me for affirmation. I want to be affirmed. I want to be liked. I want to be looked up to. And I think those things come from a sense of insecurity sometimes. And so God has used different things in my life to remind me that the only affirmation I truly need is from Him. And so He's used the hard things, He's used the great things to continue to remind me of that consistent need of His affirmation.
Noe, how old were you when you gave your life to Jesus Christ?
18. It was 18 years old. And it was actually after a really dark, deep time in my life during that season of a suicide attempt, actually, that I was incredibly broken that led me to that.
And I think you had a father that left, didn't come back.
That's right. He left when I was about 5 or 6 years old. He was very abusive to my mother, an alcoholic, a drug user. Didn't do the best things, came from a very broken family. And so he just continued that brokenness with his own family that he saw. And so I began to become a product of that. And so my parents divorced, and he just decided that it was too difficult for him to have shared custody. So he just thought it'd be easier to not see us at all. And so he left and never came back.
Hey, aren't you glad, Noe, that the Bible tells us that He is the God of not only Abraham, that's a good name, Isaac, that's a good name, but He's also the God of Jacob. Now, isn't that interesting? He could have said the God of Israel, because he gave him another destiny and redefined him, but he still said the God of Jacob. And so I think there's a little Jacob in all of us. And I thank you for being vulnerable here and sharing just how God has used the dark times of your life to make you the leader that you are today. And you are a great leader, by the way, Noe. In 2016, you became the senior pastor of North Phoenix Baptist Church. And of course, for those of us who've been around a while, we know that Dr. Richard Jackson was the pastor there for a quarter of a century. He retired in 1993. I believe you came in 2016, 13 years later. And so we're talking today to pastors, Noe, about how to change a culture that you've inherited, and yet at the same time still wanting to honor that culture. Start by telling us, what was the state of the church at North Phoenix Baptist Church when you got there in 2016? Can you do that?
I can. Yeah, I followed two really great pastors. Richard Jackson is well known for being the evangelist. This is a strong leader, led the church into some really great seasons. He was there for about 20 plus years. After him came Dan Yeary, who was polar opposite, but was more of a shepherd. He walked amongst the crowds. He healed, not physically healed, but he was more focused on healing people in terms of spiritual just depth with them, obviously. And so two polar opposite personalities. So then I get there 2016. The church at this point had about 800 members, which was a huge decline from the 20,000 in Richard Jackson's time. And so great people, very discouraged, very frustrated. Someone told me when I first got there, they said, just a heads up, you don't have a long landing strip. You have a very short landing strip to prove yourself. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I found out very quickly. And so the state of the church, I would say, were people who loved the Lord that were probably pretty discouraged and frustrated with where the church had gone at this point.
And so we talk about shaping a culture, we talk about changing a culture, we even talk about creating a culture, and we talk about cultural change. You knew that the culture needed to change. And we want to talk today about how do you change that, still honor the past of that culture, but knowing it needed to change. As you got there, knowing you got a short runway, what were some of the things that you could help us as pastors and you could help pastors understand getting there? How do you change a culture, knowing? Because you've done that right now. And start by telling us where you are right, like what you had just a few weeks ago.
So we have, we have worked very hard to change the culture. And over time, here's what we've seen over almost, 8 years now. We just in attendance hit about 4,100 in attendance, which is, we celebrate it. It's exciting. But there are a lot of hard things that we had to do to get to a place where the culture was different. Now, I'll tell you, I didn't do it right. I didn't do it. I came on board. I saw the things that needed to change. And I was young. I was ignorant. I was naive. I was filled with zeal. I did not realize the amount of hurt I was about to experience because of the decisions that I made. But not only experience, the amount of hurt that I would cause people by making these decisions. I had no clue how people were about to be hurt. And I saw it as a church was in decline. There were some things that needed to be changed quickly. We were bleeding out. I didn't realize that me bringing attention to these things was offensive. It was basically calling the baby ugly. And I had no right to do that as a 32-year-old pastor. And so I came on, I saw things that needed to be changed, and I began to change things. And here's what I did wrong. I always say this. I came in cutting the trees from the bottom up, which when you cut the tree from the bottom, it falls where it may fall, and it causes a lot of damage. And so I was reckless in my decisions, not intentionally. I never made a decision ever to intentionally hurt somebody, ever. That was not in my heart, but I did. Sure. But I did. And so when I cut the trees, they fell, and I had no clue, no experience, no wisdom to recognize that this was about to hurt a lot of people. Now, I would say the trees still needed to be cut. But I wish I would have cut it from the top down so it was more controlled. And so some things I would have done differently. Number one, I probably would have taken the time to know the people better before I made deeper decisions. So I think I came in, I made decisions, therefore, the church saw me as something that I wasn't, and I saw them as something that they weren't. And we didn't like each other. We didn't like each other because we didn't get the time to know each other. And honestly, the church, I'm sure people left, and I'm sure if you were to ask them, they can tell you tons of stuff that I did wrong, and they would blame it on me. If you sat down with me, I'd blame it on them. The truth is, I think we're both guilty. We didn't take time to know each other and to know each other's heart. And when you don't take time to know each other, you assume motives. And when you assume motives, you assume the worst about each other. And so, you know, looking back, I think, man, those are some great people that I didn't slow down long enough to get to know. So I would say, number one, slow down, get to know them. Number two, you still got to make the decision to change culture. You still got to make the hard decisions. So number two, I would make the decisions with leading with the why. Here is why we are making this decision. And I did that, but I probably did it way too quickly. I skipped the number one, which would have been a lot easier. And so, you know, changing culture and leading with the why is really big. So taking time to know who they are. And then number two, taking time to lead with the why.
They say that people do not mind change. What they mind is loss. At North Phoenix, what did you, now that looking back at it with that perfect vision that we can when we look in the hindsight, what was it that you saw that was really they saw as a loss? You're seeing it as a gain, you're seeing this is a change, this is something that needs to happen. What would be an example of a loss for maybe the people who've been there for a long time?
That's a great question. With they saw as a loss were the things that I saw as barriers that kept us from changing culture. So for example, certain programs that they've been doing for 20 plus years that were great programs and that worked in the 90s, but no longer worked in today's culture. We took a look at these programs and recognized these take a lot of effort, a lot of energy, and a lot of resources. We don't believe this is what we want to do moving forward to reach our community. We had to take a look at several of those programs like that in the church that cost us a lot of money, resources, and energy, and ask us the question, are these programs needed for where we're trying to go in the future? And that's when things got really bad. That's when things became pretty challenging because some faithful church members were tied to these programs. They've given their life to these programs. And here I was saying, we have $19,000 in the bank, which is what we had when I got there. And we were not meeting budget. We can't keep doing the same things because we've been doing them for years. We got to be more strategic about how we spend money. And yeah, so that made me the bad guy for cutting some of these things.
Hey, Noy, what would the members say was the biggest change? And what would the visitors at your church, what would they say the biggest change that God brought there for the people?
Oh, depends on who you ask. So I would say the common phrase I hear now, and I want to be careful because I don't want it to feel like it's a shot to the old culture, because I did not do a good job of honoring the history of the church. I did a very poor job of honoring the past, not even intentionally. I was so focused on the future that I did a very, very poor job of honoring the past. And that's what I would tell anybody. I would tell anybody who's leading through change, you must honor the past. And let me tell you, when this kind of light bulb went off, is when year six, I hired several new staff. They came on board, and these new staff they began to dishonor the 6 years of work that I had put in. I had no clue what that felt like. The dishonor and the disrespect of six hard bloodshed years, and they looked at it and dismissed it. A light bulb went off, and I thought, Lord, I am so sorry. I had no clue that this is what the people were feeling like when I came on board, that I dishonored 30, 40, 20 years of their faithfulness, and it hurt me. I felt horrible. And from that moment on, I vowed, and I do to this day, I intentionally take times in service, quarterly or whatever it may be, to honor what those have done that really set the platform for us to be here today at North Phoenix. The sacrifice, the service, the faithfulness. And so I do a way better job now. But, and I'll tell you, it's number one, I think it's the right thing to do. It just is. It is the right thing to do to honor those that have just been so faithful. The truth is, Pastor Ken, if Richard Jackson, if Dan Yeary were not faithful to their call, I wouldn't be here today. I would not be at North Phoenix experiencing, and I fully mean that. I would have said that 7 years ago because it was the right thing to say. I say it today because it is the truth. And I made a mistake, and I hate that, but I made a mistake. And honoring the past is really important. And so I think it takes you further when you're trying to change culture. It takes you further.
Both of those men have had a deep impact into my life. Richard Jackson, of course, was known for evangelism. He was an incredible leader within our own convention, an incredible soul winner, and reached people for Christ. Dan Yeary was more of a conversationalist in his preaching and a different style. When I was in college, those were the 70s and late 70s that I think that God used pastors like Dan Yeary to kind of help move into some spiritual health, but wasn't afraid to talk about emotions and talk about the emotional health of an individual as well. So God has used different people at different times in life, just like he's using Noe Garcia. So you get there, you're running hundreds, you're not running thousands. Walk us through a little bit, some of this cultural change, and it's a spiritual change, it's a dynamic, and God's got his hand on it, and I know you give him praise for it, but what was one of the first things that you did? Because if I'm a pastor listening today, I'm tuning in right now to think, this is where I am. How do I get to 1,000, to 2,000, to 4,000? How do I get from hundreds to thousands? I want to know what Noe Garcia, what did God do there? What did you do?
Well, I inherited a church with a bunch of subcultures. Every ministry had its own philosophy. Great people, but every ministry had its own philosophy. There were a bunch of subcultures. I recognized that if we were going to move forward into where God was calling us, we have to have the same philosophy. We want to go the same direction and have the same culture. What began to happen early on is the culture I was trying to create was getting eaten up by the subcultures that were already in the church. And so it was working against each other. So the first thing I had to do, which was the most difficult thing, was to take a look at the entire leadership of the church to be sure that the leadership were going the direction I wanted us to go, and it wasn't. The leadership, to be honest, not all of them loved me. And unfortunately, they used their influence to work against me. So I had to work from the elders to the staff, to the deacons, to the volunteers. And one, you know, category by category, we had to put people in position who are not opposed to the changes of the church, because it was working against us, and had to sit down and have a hard one, heart-to-heart talk, and to align the hearts, to help them understand we all want the same thing, and that is reaching people with the gospel. How we do it may look different, but we have to come to the place to where we recognize if you're in leadership, you're not going to work against me, you're going to work with me. If you have any differences, let's do what the Bible says. Let's call a meeting. Let's talk through those. But I'm asking you, as your brother in Christ, to no longer bash me out there, or bash my other staff, or bash my family, or bash my leadership. If you have an issue, you're a deacon in the church. I'm going to ask you to come to me from now on and do this the correct way for the health of the church. Some people fell right in line, said, you got it, I'll do that. I didn't want yes men around me. I just wanted to do things the biblical way. I wanted people who had a heart for the loss to link arms with me, not to agree with everything, but to be able to talk to me when they didn't agree and come to me and not to go to the crowds. And so we set a vision, we set a target, we set a philosophy and said, hey, if you're on board, we'd love to have you. It was all biblically driven, biblically sound, so that nobody can push back and disagree. It was all straight from the Bible. So that if you have an issue with where we're going, you have an issue with the scripture. And so some people left, they started new churches. We lost, I would say today, we probably only have about 200 of the original 800 left in the church, 200 to 300. But you know what? I think those that are left are probably much happier other places, and they're serving other churches. And we've reached a whole new group of people that we probably wouldn't have reached otherwise, honestly. And so the Lord worked it out. A lot of pain, a lot of patience. But I think the key thing I did was, if we're going to set a new culture, we have to have the right leaders in place who are going to go the same direction with me and not work against me. That was pretty big.
Okay, so leadership is part of that cultural change. Talk to us about preaching. Was there a different style of preaching? What was the first thing you did? Are you an expositional type of preacher? Did you just say, here's what we're going to do, and you hand out some notebooks, and we're going to walk through this book of the Bible? What did that look like for us listening to you? What did that look like if I went going to that church and you're my new pastor?
That's a great question. So culture was built in several ways. One of them was the leadership, and then it was the preaching. So my preaching, I had to recognize who was around us. Phoenix is ranked 89th out of 96 least Bible-minded cities in America. I had to figure out, how do we become culturally relevant, but not to the point where we're biblically irrelevant? I wanted those two things.
Say that again, because that is a really key statement, and I want every pastor to hear that.
Yeah, so I wrote about this in my dissertation, because I think that churches often get stuck and they're so afraid to be culturally relevant, because they think that it means that you don't teach the Bible. And then you have some people who say, forget the culture, I'm going to preach the Bible. I don't care what the culture says. I don't think it's either or. I think it's both and. I think to be healthy and effective, Jesus did it. You have to understand your culture. So be culturally relevant, but not to the point where you're biblically irrelevant. So we pride ourselves and we work hard to say we are going to be culturally relevant without being biblically irrelevant. So what we begin to do is start with me from the pulpit. I took off the suit and tie, because our culture around us is that just was not that. And so I became a little more casual in my dress. I began teaching in a way that had the least Bible-minded city in mind. For example, I threw away phrases like, you know this story, or you've heard this before, or I know you know what I'm talking about. I could no longer say those things because it wasn't true for our culture and our context. So I began to use an iPad in my preaching. I use, much like John Piper does, he underlines, he circles. So we started going through books of the Bible. And I'm an expositional preacher. I just started circling. I started underlining. I started giving the Greek definition of the word, the Hebrew. And I'm telling you, the least Bible-minded city, 89th out of 96 people in America, ate it up. We bought Bibles for everybody and did we're going to do a free Bible handout this Sunday as we start the book of Romans. And we exploded in growth. I mean, 1,000, even this past year, we've had 1,000 new attenders in 1 year this past year. because they are so hungry for truth and so hungry for the Bible. I don't have to use gimmicks. I don't have to use bait and switch. I just say, we're going to teach you the Bible in a way to where you understand it, and I'm going to stick to the truth. And so it's been really neat to see, but building that culture from the pulpit has been pretty big for us.
So they say after 5 years, the church takes on the pastor's personality. Yeah. So what is North Phoenix Baptist Church's personality right now? Because that's your personality. What is it?
You know, I'll tell you, it's one of the easiest places to preach for people. They love the word. They are responsive. They will talk to you. They are circling. They are taking notes. They have a fun, loving personality. They love Jesus. They pursue holiness while opening the window of grace. That's how I would describe our church, a church that pursues holiness, but have also opened the window of grace for people. And so it's an incredible church. It's filled with joy. It is welcoming. It is, I love it. I tell them every Sunday. I didn't used to do this. I tell them every Sunday when we leave, I love you. I love you. I tell the church I love them every Sunday. So it's a great place to be.
Exposition, topical.
So I am expositional. We go through books of the Bible. Every once in a while, we will stop and pause and go through a topic. For example, I just did angels and demons. But even though we go through a topic, I'm expositional in my approach. So if, you know, here's a text on angels, I'm going to, you know, break it down, dissect it. I don't like using, 15 scriptures to prove my point. I'm going to use one text. I'm going to break it down, and they love it and they're used to it. In fact, if I invite a guest preacher and he's not expositional, I will get emails about it.
That's good.
Which is a good, healthy thing.
So let's get to know Noe Garcia here a minute. Outgoing or inward?
Outward.
cup half full, cup half empty.
Oh, it depends on the day.
Are you a planner? Are you a winger?
Oh, I'm a winger. I'm a winger.
Yeah, kind of impulsive a little bit?
Not even a little bit. Very impulsive.
People or process?
People.
First one to leave or last one to leave?
Depends on what the event is. If it's a room full of pastors, I get introverted. I'm the first one gone. If it's a Sunday morning, I'm the last one in the room every Sunday.
Amen. So where is Noe Garcia's strengths and where's Noe Garcia's weaknesses?
My strengths are, I believe that I see what God can do in anybody's life. I don't think anyone is outside God's grace and God's ability to use them, no matter what they've done. Man, I believe the Lord can change anybody. I feel like that's a strength of mine, that I can just see it. A weakness is, this goes back to the opening of my testimony, I don't trust very easily. I don't trust. My approach has always been guilty until proven innocent. And I think that has hurt me in ministry, because it's caused me to not have a great network sometimes. And it's caused me to have shallow relationships. I can walk in the room and make everybody feel like they're my best friend, but the depth of that relationship is not great. And so I think my past plays a big role in being able to trust people. And when I do, and then somebody hurts me, it almost goes back to I knew I shouldn't have done that. But I don't believe it's the way the Lord wants me to live. So I would say that's a huge weakness of mine that I've worked through for a long time. It's been a long time that I've been working through that.
Who's helped you develop leadership skills the most, do you think?
I would say it's Charlie Stroup. I think he comes from the business world. He has taught me leadership in ways that 3 degrees have not. And I've recognized that I was not prepared to lead a church when I became a pastor. So he's helped me become a leader that I think this church needs.
When you look back over the history of North Phoenix Baptist Church, and it has a great and glorious history, it really does. What are you the most grateful for concerning the men that came before you?
I would say Dan Yeary and Richard Jackson, their love for the Lord and their love for people. Those are the two things that I really admire that I want to have. They love the Lord and they love his people. And if I could do that well, I'd be a happy man if I could love the Lord well and love his bride well. Those are the things I admire.
So in closing here, as we close this out, you're talking to pastors. So I want you just to visualize in your mind, you're sitting down with a group of guys and you have led through some cultural changes and you've made some shifts. And I appreciate your vulnerability. You even said some things, hey, I wish I would have done some things a little bit different. But talk to us for a moment about the pastor out there that really knows he needs to, and he really wants to. He wants to have a cultural shift and he wants it to be positive. What would be some things you'd say, make sure you do this and slow down if you try to do this? What is it you would say to that guy out there who really, really desires to have change but wants to honor the past?
That's a great question. Now, here's what I would say. Number one, it's going to be hard. It was the most difficult thing that I ever had to do. It led me into depression, led me into anxiety. I was insecure about who liked me and who didn't like me. It was the most difficult thing I ever had to do. And so number one, it's going to be hard, which leads me to number two. Number two, be sure to take care of yourself and your family. The health of the pastor and the health of his family is the most important thing, especially during changes like this, because the enemy is going to attack in all kinds of ways. And the healthier the pastor is, the more he'll be able to endure during this time of change, cultural change. It's like when you change a culture, it's like you're poking at a beehive. And what happens when you poke at a beehive, you have some bees that see you as a threat, so they come and sting you. You have some bees who say, I'm out of here, and they fly away. And you have some other bees that hang on to the hive to dear life and say, this is my hive, I'm not going anywhere. And you experience all three. And so I would just say, you take care of yourself because the bees are going to sting. Number three, remember God has called you. I would close with that. Remember you are doing this because God has called you. So it's going to be hard. Take care of yourself and your family. And God has called you to this.
No, it's been a great talking to you today. My last question is basically this. What are you the most excited about when you think about the future of North Phoenix Baptist Church?
I'm most excited just about the health and the spiritual depth that's taking place in our church right now. People are growing spiritually and God's doing a great work in their lives. And I'm so excited about that. And I'm excited to continue to see that.
Well, listen, thank you for listening today to the Equipping Pastors podcast. And we have enjoyed having Noe Garcia talk to us about leading through cultural change and how fast you can do it. And he's been vulnerable. He's been wonderful. And so we are so grateful for Noe Garcia being here. Hey, listen, if you enjoyed this podcast today, would you give us a ranking or give us a rating of that? That helps us identify other people who want to join the podcast and listen to that each month that it comes out. Pastors, please know this. North American Mission Board, you are our number one customer. And we want you to feel like that we are your number one fan. We love you. We thank God for you and what you're doing. As Noe so well said today, pastoring is hard. God's grace is good. And just remember this, it's always too early to quit. Hey, don't quit. We need you. So whether you're thriving or whether you're just surviving, you keep hanging in there because we at North American Mission Board, we want to engage with you. We want to encourage you, but we want to equip you in the calling of ministry of your life. So may today you have a Jesus-filled day.
You've been listening to Equipping Pastors with Ken Whitten, a podcast powered by the North American Mission Board. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us, or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to help other pastors find this podcast. To find more resources to engage, equip, and encourage you as a pastor, visit EquippingPastorsPodcast.com.